Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Poetry Salon Cast. I'm your host, Tricia Faye Hefner.
And I'm Callie Grace Thomas.
On each episode, we interview one of our favorite poets to ask what got them started writing.
And what keeps them going.
And my favorite question, what do they do with a rough draft that wants to play rough?
Then we ask for advice that we, and you, our listeners, can use in our own writing practices.
Without further ado, welcome to this week's episode of the Poetry Salon Cast. So, without further ado, let me introduce our panelists. Our first panelist is Jenny Lindhorst. Jenny Lindhorst is a poet, expressive writing teacher, and founder of Life Speaks Poetry Therapy. She is on the faculty of UCLA Arts and Healing and has taught expressive writing workshops at the Los Angeles Expressive Arts Summit, the California Center for Creative Renewal, and the National Association for Poetry Therapy in the Manhattan Beach Unified School District. Jenny facilitates ongoing writing groups for all ages and original curriculum for private clients. She has a bachelor's in psychology from Skidmore College, certification in the field of poetry therapy, and a master's in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. Her poetry has appeared in numerous journals, and she is the author of two books of poems, Silver Girl and Autism Disrupted, A Mother's Journey of Hope. Thank you very much, Jenny, for being here. Next on up is Arthur Kazakian. Yeah. Arthur, I have known, he was in a workshop with Brendan Constantine, and the first time I heard him speak, I said, who the hell is that? And why isn't he teaching his own class? Arthur, I know, has studied at University of San Diego, been a student of Ilya Kominsky, and is now a teacher at the Poetry Salon. Thank you so much, Arthur, for being here. I also want to plug that he has started his Facebook group called Poets in Quarantine.
It's Letters in Quarantine. I'll put the link.
Yeah, sorry. Brian Sonia Wallace has a really interesting bio. You can learn more about Brian at, I believe it's Rent a Poet. Right, Brian?
No A.
Rent Poets.
Keeping that language brutalist, only the essential nouns.
Very good. Brian's most recent book is about his experiences going around the United States and writing poems for other people. And that book just came out, and it's The Poetry of Strangers. And I have read some of it. It's a fantastic book. It's super unique and insightful. I want to start out just by asking you guys, as things are constantly evolving and we're being so much affected by external forces right now, I'm wondering what everyone's relationship is to the news. Who's watching it? How much? And how is that affecting you as person and as writer?
I guess I'll go.
Jenny, thank you.
I am a news watcher. I'll be honest. I'm not one of those people that has just turned it off. As someone who loves to cook dinner for her family every night, that's kind of part of my routine, is that my husband and I will watch CNN, Anderson Cooper, and catch up on how it's affected. I like to stay on top of it. You know, I'm reading as well. I'm not ignoring it. I'm letting it seep in. I'm letting it affect my thoughts. I think we're going to talk later more about what we're doing to cope and how that's affecting our writing. But, you know, I definitely have a process of not allowing it to totally take me under. But yeah, it's a lot right now, but I'm watching.
Brian, want to take this one?
Sure. Oh man, it's a minefield. I try to check in on the news sort of twice a day when I get up and once before I go to bed. I think at the moment that we're recording this, we're in day two or three of protests after George Floyd's death. Yeah, the world's on fire, and meanwhile I'm like, I have a book coming out. It's about the connection and shared humanity. And there's something interesting in the news as I go about trying to think about kind of launching an idea in a way that feels really essential, because I'm very aware, and like particularly with the protests, it's an awful thing. Like, a man has died, a community has had enough, and all I can think about is how do I need to reposition my marketing? I'm not a poet who tends to write in seclusion. I tend to write as part of dialogue with other people. And so the fact that everyone's being affected by quarantine and by the pandemic, but everyone's being affected in really different ways, and trying to just wrap my head around those ways has been a part of that process and a reason to stay involved. In some ways, the fact that I have something, have a reason for it, that is sort of a businessy reason, I think helps me not just feel overwhelmed and distressed by it. I'm like, okay, there's a utilitarian reason for me doing this.
Mm-hmm. I think it feels very strangely like, on one hand, as once you become a poet as a career, the relationship between your artistic impulses and your entrepreneurial impulses feel very strange. One question that I'm always dealing with is like, is it appropriate that I am using these tragedies to influence something that is like my work? And on the other hand, isn't that also what the work is supposed to be, that we're speaking for other people, or we're speaking up about issues and we're opening up conversations for people because that's what art does? And I think for those of us who are in that position where our art is both our art and also our economy, we have like a double layer of issues that come up. Arthur, what are you thinking about this?
I don't watch the news necessarily. I just don't believe the news. It's just too much. You've got too many polarized sides. I just stopped watching the news like a little while ago because the COVID numbers kept rising and it was creating a lot of fear for me. So then I got obsessed to Twitter feeds, right? So, which is just as bad. You know, that's more polarized, right? Like, we tend to follow folks who share the same beliefs as we do. So we're always, the same information is being reinforced. But with everything that's going on, it's horrible right now what's happening. The most thing about it is, like, me as a writer, what I'm thinking is, I'm not sure how to proceed at the moment, because what I include, I'm excluding so many other forces. Now, the only thing I could say is just to be supportive and not to be violent about my support. We've reached a point where the system is failing. It has been failing for a long time. So how do we as artists move forward in a world where we can be supportive of that, but not let our privileges bleed on that?
Yeah, it's a really strange dance, I think, that everyone is feeling right now, where we're asking ourselves what is our involvement? What is our responsibility to one another? What are the limits of our capabilities? Jenny, I want to return to you because you had said about some self-care here. I think that's the next question, which is, how do you balance your interests in being part of the world and being a good global citizen as an artist with also your needs as a human being?
Yeah, I think this is obviously such a strange time of us being locked down with, and whoever you're quarantining with, or if you're alone or with your family. You know, we're so much in our own thoughts, bumping up to ourselves all the time. And I think there's a lot of stress that people don't know what to do with, especially when this was first beginning, this sense of how do I structure my day with my work, with my writing, with my family, all the cancellations, how do we balance that? Really, there's three things that I think have been so helpful for me and in working with my clients. Is your thinking, your attitude, your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Pay attention. What are the thoughts that are nagging at you and the stories that you're telling yourself? When do you bump up into your darkness? And being able to be gentle with yourself and compassionate and give yourself permission to do what you need with the empty moments. I think when this first started, I don't know about you guys, but I felt like there was such a saturation of all the writing opportunities. You felt this energy of, oh, you must produce the next great poetry book right now, right? Or you must come up with all the best workshops right now that you can offer. And I really had to pull back, and I noticed around me in my writing community, and we had to give each other permission to just, let's stay in our own lane. and try and figure out what is going to feel okay for us. So to really watch your thoughts, what do you need? What kind of support do you need? The next one is really making sure that you have support. Do you have support in your household? But in the creative community, I think that one, I'm always taking some sort of class, right? So I need something to hold me accountable. I'm doing more craft study now because I'm actually working on a collection versus doing a lot of therapeutic writing, which is my other field. What kind of class do you need to take right now? Is it craft? Do you want a lot of feedback? Or are you really needing something that is holding you accountable, but just asking you deeper questions and letting you write because you need to write, and something that maybe someone that can support you? And that would be more of the poetry therapy field, where you're working more in the process and you look at the product later. You know, another thing that happened early on, I had a writer friend, she wanted to talk business. Like, what are you doing? She was feeling that kind of frenetic, competitive energy. How are you marketing? How are you doing your workshops? But we got on the phone and she was having a really tough time. She said, I am unable to write right now. And I don't know how to take care of myself. Like, I'm just like stuck. Literally, that was back in March. Every week we have a phone call. It's only 15 minutes. And we get on and we write. And then we share and then we hang up. And we're not giving feedback, we're not giving editing, but it was a way to help us show up to the page. But taking a class, I think, is something, there's so much out there. And, you know, if people want to know some therapeutic places that are offering free classes, I can type those up or whatever. But there's so much out there. So if you feel like you need support in that way, do so. And lastly is inspiration. I mean, we as writers, as creative people, need to be looking through the world right now, everything with our writing glasses on, and things that inspire me. I hope everyone's reading a lot. I think even if you're reading just a novel, look for passages. Maybe you're reading a self-help book. Maybe you're reading a lot of poetry, but be looking for things that inspire you, that are speaking to what you're going through. And that's the poetry therapy process, is always looking for, where am I in here? And whatever you're chewing on, you're going to find it, but use that. So I'm doing that a lot. I'm doing that a lot with music. Music's been a real big part of my quarantine time, and listening to lyrics, listening to podcasts, supporting yourself by being inspired. So I think those three things, you know, you really paying attention to your thoughts, making sure you're getting support, and that you're paying attention to inspiration and taking care of yourself. I mean, moving, walking, exercise.
Yeah. And, you know, Jenny, I mean, part of the reason I really wanted to have you on this podcast is I think you're one of the few people I know who's, I mean, first of all, poet and poetry therapist. So you have some great wisdom to share that way. I think you're one of the few people I know who's also quarantined with a family right now. I almost feel like there's this big divide, the ones that have the kids and family obligations, the ones who are still able to do their work from home. For them, there's even less free time in some ways because now they're taking on the role of being their kid's teacher. Whereas for others who don't have families living with them, we've now got this plentitude of free time because we're not out with our friends or socializing or hustling as much. What about folks who are now at home with too much free time on their hands? Is there a balance? Is it hard to find a balance? I know, just speaking from my own experience, I feel like the only thing I can do right now is read and write. And sometimes I don't want to spend 8 hours a day reading and writing. So I'm wondering from folks what that is like. Brian, what about you? You've got a smile like you've got something to say.
How's that for you? I mean, yeah, I think all of that discourse is, I know it took me a couple of weeks into quarantine, so I was working a lot in schools. I work with GetLit as their manager of education, and so I was in a school doing like a daily residency in the 2 weeks leading up to quarantine. And so on Wednesday, I was told, well, actually, this is going to be our last day. We're going to close a couple days early because the kids aren't going to be able to come back next week. A lot of the students there had family in East Asia and were talking about their experiences in quarantine. Certainly for the first couple of weeks of quarantine, I did no writing and I did no reading, and I watched a lot of trash TV and I bought ice cream. And I kind of started writing again with sort of journal entries that I then posted on Facebook. And I went, well, I haven't used this platform in this way before, but like, here's how I'm doing. Just kind of want to talk about this with everybody. The being at home all the time is kind of tough. I'm busier now than I was before because I'm working on sort of four major projects simultaneously, and they all are online, which means it's a whole world. Like, I have spent the creative tasks that I have done this week include learning how to set up a live stream for your Zoom in advance and embed that in a website so that you can live stream your Zoom crap to other places. Thinking through a lot of show formats for if you're going to have an open mic, if you're going to have this kind of stuff in this digital space, how can you make it exciting? That's a challenge, and it's a challenge in part because now that everything is on Zoom, one of the things that we've talked about a little bit in the youth arts education space is now that kids' school is on Zoom, for them to be doing poetry workshops on Zoom is just going to feel like school. So how do you create a different experience of teaching and of learning that doesn't require the students to come and sit in front of the computer, because they're sitting in front of the computer 8 hours a day for the stuff that they are mandated to do? And so I've been thinking a lot within that about like poetry prompts that involve taking walks or involve exploring, like how can we have those embodied practices be part of the poetry that we're doing? I'm really fortunate here that I have a backyard, and so I've been spending a fair amount of time out there, which I didn't do before quarantine. I would occasionally have breakfast out there, but that's kind of been when the indoors gets to be too much, I'm able to move and have sort of a second space. And then I loved what Jenny talked about in terms of creating structures to force yourself to be productive. Kind of at the beginning of quarantine, there was a filmmaker who I met a number of years ago who'd been talking about doing some work together. And he was like, well, I'm out of a job for a while, and so is my friend. And so we're doing kind of a round robin or exquisite corpse with me, this filmmaker, and a composer. So every week we have to send each other a 1 minute piece. And then it kind of cycles through the three of us. So if I start the piece, I write a piece that's 1 minute when read. The composer puts music on it. The filmmaker creates a film around it. Or vice versa, I'll get a piece of film and have to write a poem for it. So that's been really cool. And that's been really nice to be in sort of a creative exchange. It's fairly independent. There's just a deadline.
I would actually love to know more about what you are doing with students, kids in Zoom meetings to make it feel different from their other 8 hours of education a day. Do you want to like just give us a couple of examples that you've found really useful?
Totally. I mean, I think the biggest thing in Zoom is just that if you're not one of the people actively talking, it can get really deathly. And so just using breakout rooms as much as possible and giving discussion questions and just putting people directly in dialogue with each other and going, look, I'm not going to be able to teach you in this format very well. So let's have you teach each other and let's give you a task and let's just have you figure it out. And some people are going to drop off and some people are going to really excel in that. And that's the space that we're in, unfortunately. A lot of what I believe about teaching in general is project-based learning. So like when the pandemic hit through Get Lit, we did this absolutely insane class where we said in 6 weeks, you will have a chapbook and we will meet once a week. So I was sending out daily prompts and meeting with the kids weekly to kind of talk about what a chapbook is and how you might go about putting that together. But really with the assumption from the beginning being, you are here because you want to make something. My job is to help you make that thing. But whatever steps we take along the way are what they are. And it's really on you to do that to whatever level you do it. And then our job is to help you elevate that. And so I think that's been important in the way that I've been thinking about, particularly working with young people. And I feel this way as an educator in general. I'm like, I don't have a lot to tell you. I can take you seriously. I can give you space. And there's a couple of things that you might want to do that I've done before. Sort of the limit of my powers as a human.
Arthur, I didn't get your response to this. How are you dealing with the being home 24 hours, basically?
I've gotten pretty good at Zoom. I've had to learn it, you know, the breakout rooms. To speak on what Brian and Jenny said, I totally agree. One thing that's most important is how to continue this conversation internally to not go insane, right? Because with everything that's going on outside of us right now, how do we still keep an equilibrium? How do we stay composed? It comes down to the conversation that we have with our mind and what our mind tells us. If I'm not paying attention to what my mind is telling me, I'm going to start believing that. And it happens because it's running 24/7. It's just a fear-producing machine. Constant narratives. It never stops working. A lot of times what my mind is telling me is not true because I don't know what other people are going through. I don't know what's happening. You know, all I know is what I'm seeing and what responsibility I have and how to be accountable and how I move forward. I think one way to stay in solidarity and to be an ally with what's happening is to not reinforce trauma. Think about your posts. Don't post racist shit. Be mindful about what's happening. And if you don't have anything helpful to say, don't say anything at all at this moment. It's not your space.
I love that, Arthur. I just want to pause on that for a second too, because, you know, I asked the question about what's everyone's relationship right now to paying attention to the news, but I didn't really ask about social media. I took a day yesterday because the Thursday night group, no one was watching the news. I asked everyone and they're all just like, oh, just a little bit, but I'm trying to stay away from it. So I got peer pressured into trying to stay away from it for a day. That's how long it lasted. And then I just went to scroll through Facebook in the evening and like every other post is some update about the news. You know, people who believe differently from me, well, I just hope they get the coronavirus and die. And people calling each other POS pieces of shit. And I feel really bad because on one hand, sometimes that is my first impulse, is to say really hurtful things like that. And then I think about it more and I'm just like, what is that quote? Let's not become the monsters that we hate. Nietzsche's quote, when you stare into the darkness stares back.
I think you're right about that. The most important thing is respecting the spaces of the voices. People are angry right now and they have a right to be. When a system starts to fail and voices go unheard for a long time, I think this is what happens. This is historic time. You're seeing people rise up against the state right now. And it's scary, but it's needed. It's a way to actually balance things out. I don't know if things have ever been balanced, really. They've never really been balanced. I was born on a war-torn block where there's machine gun fire and oppression happening outside my window. The Ayatollah came in, rolled up on the resistance, and there was like people killing each other. And my mom would look at me and tell me a parade is coming. She would close the blinds and try to protect me from the outside world. So I was born in that. I had to flee from land to land, and then I came to the States. With everything that's happening, the way I do to take care of myself is I need to pay attention to my thoughts, and I need to stay centered and grounded, whatever that means to me. I have to stay connected to my love, because tapping into my hate is only going to make things worse, right? And what I mean by that is self-hatred, like, oh, you're nothing, you don't have a voice. Those thoughts that creep in. That's one thing. Another thing that I've been doing is I have a therapist I see once a month right now because, you know, the funds are just low. She doesn't take insurance. In the meantime, I've joined a lot of different communities in writing workshops. I've been with the Filipinx community with my friend Hari Alori, who wrote The Flayed City. One is the Community Building Artworks Workshop run by Seema Reza. She's the organizer and CEO. Fantastic human being. It's partly the writing is craft oriented, but also therapeutic at the same time. I found this safe place to be able to write. There's some other workshops, the Digital Sala that I've been going to. These are all free writing workshops that are available right now, run by organizations. They've been amazing. I've met so many different writers. I've been attending open mics. You know, when I created Letters in Quarantine, it was mainly to create space for artists to stay connected and to talk about what they're going through, right? And that continues to transform now. It's not just letters, it's photos and drawings.
Hello, listeners. This is Tricia Faye Hefner and Kelly Grace Thomas of the Poetry Salon.
And as you know, we really love talking about poetry with our guests.
But one thing we love even more than that is sharing our poetry and our poetry community with all of you.
So if you're a poet who wants to get inspiration, education, and make friends with other writers, we invite you to become a member of the SalonCast on Patreon.
When you join this online group, you are going to get writing prompts and revision techniques sent directly to your inbox every week.
Plus, you get to see how Tricia and I use the revision techniques to revise our own messy, crazy, mediocre first drafts.
You don't write mediocre first drafts, Kelly.
Sure I do, Tricia. We all do.
And if you want to share your work, listeners, you can post it in our private Facebook group.
And you can give and receive positive, supportive feedback.
Best of all, once a month, Kelly and I will host a live poetry reading where you can join us and read your poems out loud to us and the group.
It's like a 24-hour gym membership for your muse.
6 a.m. in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And best of all, it comes at just $9 a month.
So don't try to be perfect.
And as always, whoever writes the worst draft wins. I'm going to open things up. If you want to ask a question or any kind of comments you want to make, please just raise your hand. Roz, thank you.
Hi, everybody. So happy to see some creative faces. I have to be very diligent to keep myself grounded and not just wallow. I just wrote down a question I often ask myself when I start going down that fear tunnel, and that is, do I want to go down and wallow in the depths of the sinkhole? Some of you know I live with my husband, daughter, 2 grandchildren, my daughter's partner, and his son. So we're a little village here, 7 people. I feel like the matriarch, you know, the Mother Earth figure who helps to hold things together. It would be very easy for me to start drowning and stay under the covers, not really face the world, and it's just getting so dark. I mean, we have this congruence happening now of the most volatile ammunition to set off gosh knows what in the country, you know, with the pandemic and the Black people being killed and an incompetent president and people without jobs and without money. And whew, it couldn't be more volatile than it is now. So I make a daily to-do list, and on my daily to-do list, it's always there's some writing involved. I do some walking, usually even in my house. I've been out a few times, but only maybe in my little cul-de-sac. I haven't been anywhere for like 11 or 12 weeks now, kind of lost track of time. So my meditation helps me. My Buddhist writings help me a great deal. And I try to pay attention to doing some kindness every day, maybe calling friends who I know are ill or some elderly friends I have, right? Doing some personal writing notes of gratitude. So just doing some acts of kindness to remind me of my humanity and my ability to do something good despite the tensions of the world.
No, I was just going to say, Roz, that's really, first of all, just I want to commend you for taking time to write notes of gratitude. That's a great writing practice for everyone at this time is writing. Did you have a question? Did I cut you off from a specific question you wanted to ask?
No, you said questions or comments. I didn't have a question, so that was my comment, really.
Well, yeah. Your comment kind of raised a question that I was hoping someone would address, which is, when does it become too much? Even the not just the listening to the news or being aware of what's going on, but your own time to sit down and delve into writing about these topics.
And this is funny because I was just thinking yesterday after, 10 weeks, that it becomes too much for me when I forget who I am and I become what I hear. I become the news. I become my fears. I become my projections. I become my lack of hope. I mean, it's just like yesterday I popped through that and said, wait a minute, who am I? What am I? What's going on here? I feel like I'm it. I had to pop myself out and just look and say, oh, this is happening around me. Part of it is happening to me when I identify with it. So I can't say that I've mastered not identifying, but at least I became aware of a separation yesterday that I'm not it. Who am I and how do I see myself 2 years from now or 5 years from now? Because I know it's going to pass. Yes, it may take 2 years, it may take a year, I don't know. But it will pass, you know. I may be a very old lady, but I hope to be a living old lady.
Natalie, I just love what you're saying there. I love that idea of remembering that there's this separation between you and the world and that you are not the circumstances that are engulfing us right now. Jamie, did you want to say?
Yeah, and I think too, I mean, listening to Roz, you talked about that swirling down into that black hole, right? That darkness. Mm-hmm. I think we all have that kind of hovering dark cloud that kind of comes and we bump into it in these days. And I think it's really important that as we feel that creeping on us, to get really present, right? I love that idea of separating ourselves out of it. Can you observe it for a second? But can we also pay attention to what are the things in your present life, right? In your home, right there, not out in the big world. Where can you tap into where you can enter what we call flow? That place where we separate out of all of that noise and we can get into something that really allows, a lot of us know that feeling from creativity, right? I feel it when I'm painting. I feel it when I'm cooking. If I can get myself out of the house and take that walk, just getting on the sneakers. When I read my poem, you'll hear that. It's those transitions that are so difficult, but to really pay attention, get present, observe it. You don't really even have to fix it in that moment. You know, look for that support. Look for that activity that you love that's right there that maybe you can immerse yourself in, or go lay down and take a nap for 20 minutes. Separate your mind out of it.
But
it
sounds like
you're doing so many great actions, Roz, that are available to you. But it does. It gets to be too much.
You know, I'm realizing, and I totally hear you on that, Jenny, but it does also raise this other issue I'm dealing with. There's lots of other things to be writing about. There's so many other projects I started before the quarantine. I think this is true for everyone. One of the things that comes up when I sit down to try to write King Lear during the pandemic, in other words, write about something that's not necessarily culturally relevant, but more personal, I'm wondering if anyone has this little voice of guilt in their heads. Everyone's suffering right now. I should be doing more to be either helping other people or be conscious of other people or write about this. Brian, you had your hand up. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, man. A couple of things sort of responding to things that Ross and Ellie and Jenny had said. I want to speak for a moment in defense of wallowing.
Okay.
As a poet, it is my responsibility to remind us that wallowing is a human thing and can be necessary and can be healing, and that sometimes you have to like sit in the shit. It's not fun, but as long as you're not stuck there, as long as you can wallow and then put on your shoes and go outside and go, oh wow, that was a shitty day. One of the things, and I say that as someone who's trying to give myself permission for having those shitty days and for going, yeah, I was real sad, whatever, last weekend, like without particularly great reasons. And I didn't cope with it amazingly. I continued to be sad. I did not do things that made me not sad. I was sad for a while, and then I did something else. I think as long as you're able to do something else, like power to you and your sadness. I mean, I think that we're part of the challenge of big global connected times is it feels like we should be doing stuff that matters. And that is different from feeling like we should be writing from our experience or writing about our experience. And like one of the tricky things about not being able to go out of the house is like a lot of our experiences, that the illusion of the ways that they matter have been pulled back a little bit. And it's like, oh yes, if I didn't show up to work tomorrow, would anyone care? Well, now no one's showing up to work. And like, look, the sun is still rising. This is a Kelly Grace Thomas meme share. I made a little art piece of and put on my wall, which is the ocean still doesn't care about your career. I just love that. But I think it's a little bit deeper than that in some ways. The idea of writing from our experiences and validating those and understanding that if the experience is sitting in the house, the particulars of that experience are more interesting than the big cosmic things that we feel like we should be saying, because isn't it important? But the reality is, I think my favorite piece of writing that I've done during this quarantine was there, and it was one of those moments where there's a company called, I think, Sacred Fools in LA, and they do short 3 to 5 minute submissions of plays or writing or whatever, and they'll have actors read it for you. And so I wrote a soliloquy between a man and a houseplant, and I just had a probably half an hour of not trying to do anything for work and just meditating on this little plant that sits in my windowsill. And that was really great. And it felt like it said big cosmic things by just looking closely at what was immediately in my vicinity, which I guess is so much of hopefully what poetry can do.
But I love that. And I think that's good advice. No matter what your circumstances are with poetry, you can start with the houseplant and you don't know where it's going to go. It might go into something big and cosmic. It might go into something historically relevant. I think there's a really good quote that I cannot remember who said it. Trust what is given to you to write.
It's high melodrama. It had to be a play rather than a poem, because there was no way that I could do the kinds of things that the kind of ridiculousness that I wanted to in a form as serious as poetry.
When it's on YouTube, please post the link. Vanessa, it looks like you have a question, so take it away.
Well, I just did a search with the quote marks around a trust what is given you to write, and it came up as a poetry salon.
Oh my God.
So maybe you said it.
Ellie is telling me Toni Morrison. I know it wasn't me. I know I heard it at a poetry event years ago. I'd love to take credit, but I would never dare. I just think it's funny
that that's the first Google search thing that came up.
I definitely feel like this has been such a useful conversation, and really thank you, everyone, panelists as well as participants, for sharing your wisdom as this pandemic goes on. Sometimes I just go on Facebook, or I go into what you're running, Arthur, the Letters in Quarantine, and I just ask myself, who else is drinking Chardonnay for breakfast? Please just tell me I'm not alone and I'm not the only person having this experience. So I'm just grateful for anyone who is writing poems of honesty and vulnerability right now and sharing them, and even sharing them on social media, so we don't have to wait another 6 months or a year to read them in a book, but we get to read them immediately. So I'm truly grateful for those of you who are here sharing right now. Okay, I want to start with our panelists. So Jenny Lindhorst, would you take us away with a poem, please?
So thank you for this time, Tricia. I think this was really helpful. And to everything that you guys are all doing, I think this is a time to help people feel heard and get through this together. This is called Chasing Normal. I am chasing normal, gentle stretches of time where I lose sight of jagged reminders of the straitjacket that binds our world. If I can only remember how to order my day, place pens and markers, strands of string around structured hours. But it's the transitions that matter. That delicate step into the in-between time, that's where the darkness can seep like syrup. Standing in an empty hallway on my way to change a load of laundry, just move to the next thing, I say. My notebook waits on my bed, my walking shoes ready by the door. It curls into me, greedy with existential angst. Is this what is left, day in, day out? My son's gruff voice hovers against a closed door, his adolescence swallowed by these stucco walls. It's bigger than me, swampy holes of quicksand that want to suck me under, drag me to bed, hold shackles to my feet as I claw my way to the next thing. Move quickly, I say, pushing myself down the stairs to lace up my sneakers, step out of the faux stone arch of the iron door, wait for the left turn onto Agnes Road, where the sun blankets my back. Only then I can lift my chin, surprised by the clarity of the sky.
Surprised by the clarity of the sky. Thank you, Jimmy. Next up, Brian Sonia Wallace.
Oh, man. I think I'll share what I'm going to submit for the collaboration with the filmmaker and composer for this week. And I'll share a little bit about the process of that. One thing that came to mind as we were chatting earlier that I'll tell students sometimes, because I think it's a useful framework, especially when you're speaking with teenagers, is poetry is where we misbehave with language. And I love the idea of the invitation to misbehave. And when we're thinking about all the shit that we're doing is big and important and serious. And I liked Arthur's distinction between the writing from the bones and writing from the...
Writing from the wound.
The wound, yeah, yeah. Well, the attribution of quotes, the spiral continues. Who learned what? So all that to say, this poem is found poem made up of words from the previous five poems that I wrote in these rounds. It, I think, reads backward and then forward. So that's how I'm going to read it. And then we'll see if that's interesting. Broken arrows, dream of animal. Closer great distances across space. Settle. Eyes bright. Chasing. Run, summer, catch. We will to be built. Not waiting. You were born beauty. Toward yourself. Out of arriving. Out of yourself toward beauty. You were born not waiting to be built. We will catch summer, run chasing bright eyes, settle space across great distances, animal closer, dream of broken arrows.
Lovely. Thank you. An exercise that I've loved for a long time is just to take my work, print it out, cut it up sentence by sentence, and then start collaging it and just moving sentences around until I decide when it's done. Thank you so much. Arthur, take us away.
Okay, so what I'm going to read you today is something that I wrote yesterday. I wrote three versions of it. It's really coming from the poet Fatima Ashgar. It's from her book, If They Should Come For Us, and the poem is titled If They Should Come For Us. It's been haunting me lately, the music of it, but more importantly, with what's happening. What I did was, anytime I admire a poet like that, I'll do imitations in honor of their work to tribute them. I am not reasonable. My people come from cut flower of petaled light, blood flower and watchtower. My people, auxiliary, pot sands and dustpans. We sweeped ourselves up from the corners of the master's house. My people, forgive for gravel, spilt of cement, all activity, criminal. Naming my ex, marked on my application, the empty box marked X on my people, my people, my people. Laughter healthy with weighted shadow. Language broken from the mouth of a drum. Flower pulse, flower window, through the half shutter, we climb, mistaken for burglar. My people seek teachings from the push and pull of a broom, but I am not reasonable about my forgiveness, lined up and shot and burned, cleft of blame, of grandmother's scream. My people turned crow of country, of crown, black sea risen, indecent, foul spit mouth, lingering of cigarette patio, bowl of apples with fables carved out of coffee residue. My people reclaim our forgiveness, for nothing is reasonable in our history.
Oh, nothing is reasonable in our history. No kidding. Nicely put. Thank you. All right. I am going to read one more poem. And then I think we'll all bid each other a fond farewell for now. This is a poem that I worked on based on one of Arthur's prompts and worked on in the class with Arthur. Oh, and it starts with a quote from Kelly Grace Thomas. "This world keeps remaking itself without me." Tentatively just called Spring. "This world keeps remaking itself without me." Kelly Grace Thomas. Cicadas break their longing with catastrophic song. Winter made me happy, hiding in my shimmer and wing. A cicada evolving underground. A spider writing another failed novel about New York. Building a home in these forgotten, undisturbed weeds. Now the bud breaks its bloodlust for color. Flowers appear on branches. The sun scythes through a thunderous commandment of trees. Only I sing the world invisible again. Let this loneliness become company. Let this solitude be my savior. I'll remain underground, reconfiguring myself towards kindness. Listen, it is coming. The new world breaking differently. The old season starts to bleed. The new season, so green, every heart must burst forward from its seed. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for sharing that and being here. And as I said, I've recorded this, so in a couple of weeks, you'll get a note that this recording is up on the Poetry Salon cast, and you can listen to it again if you are trying to remember what it is that we're supposed to be doing to stay sane together. And one more time, just thank you for everyone. I'm actually going to unmute you all, so let's give our panelists one big actual hand of applause again for being here. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks to our sound editor and production manager, one-man tech department, Alan Rubenstein, for help on all things computer.
Remember, you can also check us out at thepoetrysalon.com or on the Poetry Salon's YouTube channel, where you can get access to selected poetry readings, prompts, recorded blog posts, and more.
If you want to stay in touch, ask us questions, or suggest a poet for us to interview, message us at Trisha@thepoetrysalon.com or Kelly@thepoetrysalon.com, or you can message us on our Poetry Salon Facebook page.
To help us spread the word about the Salon cast and about poetry in general, subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also tell a friend, share this on social media, or hire a plane to write a message about us in the sky.
If you want to support our poetry community and get more support for your own writing, become a Patreon member.
That's right. For $1 a month on Patreon, we'll send you a new writing prompt with a new technique every week.
And for $5 a month, we'll give you an honest, useful, in-depth look at how we use the revision techniques we got on this podcast to rewrite our old drafts.
There is no guarantee what you'll see will be pretty
or finished
or free of typos,
but it will be honest. And you'll learn some fun new ways to get a fresh perspective on your old drafts. Until next time, Saloncast listeners, stay creative and remember, whoever writes the worst draft wins.
Yay!